Welcome to the Friends with Money podcast, brought to you by Money Magazine, creating financial freedom for Australians since 1999.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Friends with Money podcast. My name is Tom Watson, and aside from lending my voice to this wonderful podcast, I'm also a senior journalist here at Money Magazine. Believe it or not, we are at the start of a new financial year, so we thought it'd be a good idea to run through some of the changes that kicked in on July 1, specifically those that relate to superannuation, because there are actually quite a few of them, and I know that I need a bit of reminding myself, that's for sure. So to bring us up to speed, I'm pleased to say that we're joined today by freelance journalist and commentator Andrew Main. Andrew, it's a pleasure to have you on the pod.
Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
Very well, a little bit chilly, but you know, making do, piling on the jumpers yes. Here in chilly Canberra. So that's my life now. As I said, there seem to have been quite a few tweaks in the super world, which kicked in on July 1. But what was the major one to come in, Andrew?
Oh, most particularly the lift in the superannuation guarantee. That, for the benefit of people who are wage toilers, that means your employer is going to kick in more. It's basically the employer's contribution goes up from 10% of your pay, I'll call it, to 10.5%, and we're on the way, theoretically at least, to 12% in 2025. Now, there's been a bit of moaning at the bar among various people in the Liberal Party, remember them, who recently had a slight electoral mishap. They've been talking about how they don't like, they basically don't like superannuation. And of course, if the employers have to put more money into superannuation, then they're going to grumble. But I think in general terms, it's a positive development. I can't help thinking back to Paul Keating in 1992, who basically harnessed, I think it was a 3% increase over across the market in what wage earners were being paid. And rather than being paid more, it went into superannuation. And that's been building up and up and up. I would say that it's you never quite know when it's going to be enough, but clearly 10.5% is better than 10%. The difficulty we've got, I can blag on about this for hours, is it takes a while for the system to be fully mature, because most of the people who are retiring now, and I'm sort of semi-retired myself, most of the people who are retiring now have built up some super, but they built up most of it back in the day when the contributions were not particularly big. So It's going to take a while, but I think personally, I think it's a very good idea. I'd also make the point, sorry, you haven't had the chance to ask any questions. I'd also make the point that these changes were brought in by the coalition government, and they've been made law now. And the new Albanese government, I don't think has made any changes to them. I don't think they could, but essentially, all of the changes are designed to make life easier for people saving for their retirement.
Well, on that point, you know, obviously the change to the guarantee rate, that's going to impact the vast majority of workers, but it'll also impact some part-time and casual workers who are actually going to start receiving super for the very first time from July 1, from now.
Yes.
So what happened there, Andrew?
Well, essentially, there was a thing called the $450 threshold, which was basically anybody who earned less than that per month before tax basically didn't supposedly have to put aside any money for superannuation. And, you know, as we sit here, I've built up a reasonable, you know, cushion of superannuation. I think it's unfortunate to realize that we had a system that anybody who was down the bottom of the pile didn't actually qualify. And it's not an easy thing, because the damn problem with superannuation, as so many young people know, is they can't touch it till they're 60. Mm. And it's all a bit, all seems a bit nebulous. They're all sitting there going, oh, why should I worry? Most particularly, of course, they're worried about put getting a deposit together to buy a house. And that's another topic that we can play around with. The $450 threshold's been abolished. That now, this measure will affect 3% of the workforce, which doesn't sound like a lot. But wait for this. Two-thirds of the recipients of this new sort of largesse, if you can call it that, are women.
And wow.
That is quite an arresting observation, because there's so many women in part-time work because, of course, they're looking after small children or elderly relatives or, you know, all sorts of things. Yeah, so that's a significant positive. It's probably a little bit of a fiddle to administer, because in many cases people have got more than one part-time job, but it shouldn't be insuperable.
So moving on, Andrew, are there any changes that will impact older Australians or those nearing retirement? You said that yourself, you know, you're semi-retired now. Are you looking forward to any of the changes that are about to come in, that are coming in, I should say?
Well, personally, no, but there's a few interesting things. Perhaps the key detail here is the work test. It's been scrapped for older Australians. Look, and these are retirees between 67 and 74, of whom I am sort of one because I'm 68. Retirees aged between 67 and 74 can top up their superannuation without having to satisfy any test, provided that their superannuation is less than 1.7 million in July 2022. Now, what this was a rather, it was a rather arcane work test that was a very low threshold anyway, that it specified you had to be employed for at least 40 hours in a consecutive 30-day period at 1 month in the year, which is all a bit weird, really. Mm. I often think that there are odd laws and regulations in place because some politician was nervous of losing votes. Cutting to the chase, retirees, those famous retirees aged between 67 and 74 should jolly well be able to save up as much as they can now, because the more they save up in a perfect world, the less the government's going to have to bail them out later.
Exactly. Mm.
So I really feel that that was a strange rule, and its departure is a good one. You can also receive the government's superannuation co-contribution after you're 67. Well, I can't remember what that is because I don't get it, but it's the government does actually help people save, believe it or not. It basically puts in, I think it's about $1,000, $1,500 a year to people who are lower down the food chain in the superannuation savings area. And that can't be bad. The co-contribution is just another little perk that the government is throwing towards people who are struggling to assemble a decent pile of superannuation, and that cannot be bad. I should throw in also the famous bring forward provisions. There's often an anomaly between people who are retired and their spouse, who's, being male, most males find their spouse is younger, and the spouse is often a woman who hasn't been able to assemble anything like as much superannuation as their husband, for reasons already discussed. Using the bring forward provisions, you can move up to $300,000 into your younger spouse's super account. It can increase your eligibility for the age pension, as well as the valuable concession cards, such as the concession health card under the assets test, until the younger spouse reaches pension age. So it's what am I groping towards? It's an evening up arrangement, and it's more tax effective. Now, I'm just trying to think if there's any obvious way to game that, and I'm sure there is. There's all kinds of ways to fiddle things, but the intent of this measure strikes me as being pretty good. There's absolutely no doubt that, let's say you've got some man who's in his, he's in his 67 plus. He's got a wife who's still in her 50s, and she's looking at her super balance. She's looking at his super balance. She's, she's sitting there going, this doesn't seem fair, because she spent, you know, approximately, you know, perhaps 7 years, perhaps 10 years, or perhaps longer out of the workforce because of family responsibilities. Mm. And she should absolutely not be penalized for that. And if something's tax effective, grab it. It seems to me that that's, to use the famous phrase, that looks like a no-brainer. There's another possibility, which is about downsizing.
Yes, downsizing. They're one of those buzzwords at the moment, right?
Yeah. Now, how that works is that if you sell a bigger house and buy a smaller house, it makes perfect sense to whack extra the difference into superannuation. Mm. And the way that works is you can contribute up to $300,000 into your super for each member of a couple to go into superannuation. And not only that, but the eligibility for downsizer contributions is lowered from age 65 to 60.
Right,
so,
okay.
I can't see what's villainous about that. Downsizing makes a lot of sense. It releases more more housing into the market, and that ideally will, if supply increases in a perfect world, that will make it a bit easier for young people to get into the market.
Well, you give me the perfect segue there to ask what's going on with one of the many schemes available for first home buyers at the moment, which is the First Home Super Saver Scheme. So what's actually been changed with that one, Andrew?
The First Home Super Scheme, if I can get this right, it basically allows you to put your FHSSS, it's called. Mm. It allows you to get access to $50,000 that you've made in total voluntary contributions, which was up. This system exists already. It's up from $30,000 in voluntary contributions last financial year. Now, this essentially is designed to help young people get into the housing market. Mm. And there's clearly a balancing act here, because one of the historical virtues of the superannuation scheme is if you get into it early, you can enjoy the miracle of compound interest. If you get into it early and you start saving, then, I mean, I can't give you exact numbers, but compound interest is just sensational. It means that for every dollar you put in when you're younger, you get much more bang for your buck in terms of your eventual superannuation payout account, should I say, than if you put the dollar in later. So I'm a skeptic here. I'll be frank with you. I'm nervous of people diving into their superannuation, whether it's for $30,000 or whether it's for $50,000, to get into the housing market. But the real underlying concern I've got is that if lots of people are exploiting this particular rule, they've got $50,000, in they go, that they're all going to be diving into the housing market at approximately the same time. And the risk that they're running is pushing prices up. This has always been a concern about first home buyer grants, that the moment a state would put in, let's say, $7,000 by way of a first home buyer grant, the next thing you knew was that the average price of new starter homes had gone up by small apartments, whatever, had gone up by $7,000. It's just something that causes me some slight concern. Now, there's a caveat built into this, by the way, that you can't dive into the money that your employers put in. You can only dive into contributions that you personally have put in on top of what the employers put in.
Right, that, so voluntary contributions.
Yeah, that makes a bit of sense. Now, you can turn around and say, well, the voluntary contributions are a forced savings scheme, and that is defensible. But it's always worried me the more ways the government can find to get you to take money out of your superannuation fund when you're still young and earning, the more awkward it could potentially become. Just summarizing then, You can use $50,000 of your superannuation to buy your first home under this FHSSS system. But it does worry me. I think what is more likely to be happening, to be honest, is that a lot of parents, the bank of mum and dad, will be helping their children into the property market. Now, that's open to debate, but that's the way the free market works. If parents of children who are in their 20s or now early 30s are basically giving them a leg up into the property market, it's not the government's job or a political party's job to say you can't do that. If that money's been saved and tax has been paid on it, then they should absolutely be able to do that. And by the way, as somebody gets into their retirement, into their pension phase, if somebody's saved up superannuation and their children are looking to get into a housing market, there's nothing to stop those retirees from pushing some of their tax-free superannuation into the hands of their children to get into the market. Now that's not going to change. That's just the reality of life.
Andrew, I feel like we could get you back on, or maybe we should get you back on for an extended chat about housing and the housing market and various schemes out there, because it's definitely a subject that I'm very interested in as well. But we should probably leave it there for today. Otherwise, we'll give too much away. So I do feel a lot more informed than I did 15 minutes ago, though. So thank you so much for coming on the show. And like I said, we'll have to get you back on the pod well before July 1, 2023, that's for sure.
Well, thank you very much. I'm reminded of Mark Scott, who was running the ABC. He used to refer to learning by talking. And I suspect that we've done a bit of that this morning. So thanks very much.
Don't forget that if you enjoy listening to the Friends with Money podcast, you can help us out by recommending it to your own friends and family, or by leaving us a review on iTunes or the Apple Podcast app. But 5 stars only, please. Pretty please. And while you're there, hit the subscribe button to make sure that you don't miss out on all our future episodes. If you have any questions, comments, or story ideas, we'd love to hear from you. So feel free to send them our way via the dedicated email, which is podcast@moneymag.com.au. And last but not least, be sure to head over to moneymag.com.au to keep up to date with all the latest financial news and views. That's it for this episode of the Friends with Money podcast. I'm Tom Watson. Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Friends with Money podcast. For credible, independent, and easy to understand financial commentary, visit moneymag.com.au. Please remember that the views and opinions expressed in this podcast are general in nature, and further independent advice and research based on your personal circumstances should be sought before making an investment decision.